You're listening to SBS News.
The modelling of infectious disease spread and containment is part of a larger field of computer modelling that is also used to forecast weather, simulate flight paths, and develop drugs. It uses mathematics and computer science to create simulated populations in which people are given certain behaviours and risks. Different variables or parameters can be fed into the model to see how changes in policy or behaviours affect outcomes. Professor Catherine Bennett is the Chair of Epidemiology at Deakin University. She describes models as fantastic tools, helping governments predict demand on public health systems and how and when to increase or reduce restrictions.
So it's all about the parameters you put into the model. You know, how likely is someone to become infected differs whether they're vaccinated or not. How likely is someone to pass the virus on? These things also differ with different variants. And so you've got these parameters, which is basically looking at some of those individual risks. What is the risk of dying? What is the risk of going to hospital? You know, does the risk change with age? All of those things are built into these models.
Since the start of the pandemic, a variety of COVID-19 models have been produced in Australia. They are all designed differently and offer different answers based on the data and formulas used. They're constantly updated as new data becomes available and as new scenarios eventuate, which in an outbreak can happen quickly. The Doherty Institute's modelling has informed the federal government's national plan. The modelling has been updated to account for current Delta outbreaks, 12 to 15-year-olds accessing the vaccine, and smarter test, trace and isolate methods.
And if you bring people on board because they're seeing the modelling, they're understanding the modelling, then you've got a better chance of actually, you know, using the modelling as a really important education tool as well. So it helps the decision makers look at all the components and pieces, the key pieces. It helps the public as well, because they then get to see what the key kinds of drivers are and how the public interaction with the health department is actually everything in public health response.
But experts warn it's important not to rely too heavily on models or to overinterpret them. Epidemiologist Margaret Hillard is a deputy director at the Burnet Institute, whose modelling informs New South Wales and Victoria's roadmaps out of the pandemic. Ms. Hillard cautions that models are one tool among a suite that should be used to inform COVID-19 responses. She says models are not an exact science.
And I think there's often a misunderstanding about how you're meant to use models by the general public, and also I think by the media, to be perfectly honest, because I sometimes get asked questions where I think even after 18 months, there's an inherent misunderstanding of what the role of the modelling is, as opposed to then, okay, because what I do is I actually think that the public get very confused with what I'm going to call the controversy that media likes to have around stuff. And I actually don't think it helps them to understand. And I also think then it leads governments to be put into sort of funny wedge positions of pressure where it can't help them make the best decision, because they're being put under pressure in a funny way. So I actually think models are really important, but they're not the be-all and end-all.
The Burnet Institute uses modelling which assesses the likely impacts of restrictions in New South Wales and Victoria and the easing of them. On its website, the Burnet Institute lists its optimistic assumptions, including schools being able to achieve a 50% reduction in transmission risk through ventilation and other measures. Ms. Hillard says it's difficult to measure variables like seasonality, how weather seasons increase or decrease transmission of the virus. That's where so-called pessimistic modelling scenarios come in.
Seasonality probably reduces the likelihood of transmission because people are outside, and being outside is important. But to say, well, how important, to what's the measure? Nobody can give us the measure. Like, we look at the literature globally and this and that, and you try and say, is there a measure for seasonality? Is it absolutely certain? And you say, no, you can't. It's not certain. So you don't put it in the model. But when you talk to the departments of health, or you talk to the government, we can't model it in, but factor it into your head when you're looking at this and thinking about it and the implications of the answer. You're missing out on something that will reduce transmission. So it may make this projection pessimistic.
Most models assume that people live in a city and not a whole range of communities, and that vaccination rates are evenly distributed. This means they're unable to calculate how COVID-19 will work in different areas. Models can also attribute only basic properties to individuals such as age, household structure, and participation in different contact networks. Professor Bennett says averages don't take into account ethnicity and attitudes to vaccination, which are important to consider and could change outcomes.
And if you then step out and you have a particular situation and it's all the worst case scenarios in the sense of you've got a vulnerable group of people, low vaccination rates, mixing in a way that increases transmission risk and the virus gets there, then that's not going to fit a model which is based on kind of average vaccination rates. And that's true even as we step through this. So it might be we get to a point where, you know, we are at 80 or 90% coverage, but we could still see these localized challenges emerge.
One of the biggest public criticisms of the Doherty modelling is how it appears to predict scenarios which conflict with what has happened overseas. The modelling suggests relatively low numbers of infections and deaths once Australia reaches 80% vaccination coverage, with ongoing restrictions in place. Meanwhile, the UK has witnessed consistently high numbers of infections and deaths at that vaccination target. Chris Baker, a research fellow in statistics for biosecurity risk analysis at the University of Melbourne, says Doherty modellers have relied heavily on modelling produced overseas, which have shown Australia how vaccines have been affecting transmission and severe disease, and how new variants are spreading. But he says the scenarios suggested for Australia reflects our unique pandemic experience.
Just because of that strong suppression that we've had for the last 18 months, we're never going to see the level of deaths and severe cases that the UK has had. And none of the policies that we even modelled or being considered in Australia for when we get to 80% match up to what the UK have done. There are essentially no restrictions when they, I think they're about 80% double dose. But if you look at the roadmaps that have been released, we've still got pretty stringent capacity restrictions and all sorts of density requirements that are still going to be in place at 80%. So I expect there will be a lot less than what we've seen overseas, just due to those continuing restrictions.
Professor Bennett says Australia's experience of opening up at 80% will probably be somewhere in the middle of the UK and Norway and Denmark's experience. She says both Norway and Denmark are the approximate size of Greater Sydney in population, with similar daily case numbers. Yet they have only had a fraction of people hospitalised with the virus by comparison, after opening up at 70% double dose vaccination and higher. Doherty sensitivity analysis released on September 18 says modelling shows the epidemic comes under control when vaccination coverage increases beyond 80%. Dr. Baker says at that point, there's still a lot of work to do. From a modelling perspective, the response at 80% and 90% is still being worked out, particularly when it comes to contact tracing and international borders. But if Australia can increase its vaccination coverage, fewer restrictions will be needed to keep things under control.
So with contact tracing, when we're no longer in a situation where we're trying to extinguish every single transmission chain, we don't need to chase down every single contact of every single case and all of their contacts. Because that's a lot of effort, and it doesn't get you a big improvement when you're aiming to minimise transmission, as opposed to when you're trying to extinguish transmission.
Professor Bennett agrees it's difficult to model too far into the future because the parameters fed into models will continue to change. Key data remains unavailable for modelling in Australia, such as how vaccination affects incubation and infectious periods. But Ms. Bennett says adaptation is possible at any stage.
We would either potentially, worst case, step back into more strict restrictions because it was too early. We would step up the public health response. We'd get the community on board and say, we've really got to step up testing, and we will have to ask you to isolate, even if you're fully vaccinated. If we can do this, we might hold off this big wave. You know, they're all the things you can do. Remodel. That's what we do. You know, they will then adjust the models. And if we have to adjust the steps on the roadmap, I think, you know, people need to understand that is still possible, because we don't want to go to those extraordinary case numbers that do at this 11th hour and 59th minute overwhelm our hospitals.
Professor Bennett says one of the best things about models is the hope and reassurance they offer.
As it stands, people often see the what they call the worst case scenario or the doomsday, you know, modelling as saying we would have had 40,000 deaths. We had 900 in 2020. And you say that's because we had the interventions in place. That's because we had lockdown. That's why we prevented those deaths. If people see that as control and understand how that works and how it might be predicted in a model and what made it look like that in a model, what were all the components, then I think that both reassures people that the effort has been worth it.
For health and support measures currently in place in response to the COVID-19 pandemic in your language, visit sbs.com.au/coronavirus. Julia Carcatzel, SBS News.